Janus Loci. Written by Argenti and read by Corey Cuthonia. Rated for teen and up audiences, with the archive warning for major character death. For the fandom of Star Wars, featuring the characters of Sarasi, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Sheev Palpatine, with the additional tags of Obi-Wan Kenobi Dies, Planet Melita Dawn, Force Ghost Obi-Wan Kenobi, Palpatine Dies. These facts are definitely related. Angst and feels. Summary. Young Obi-Wan died on Melidon, bringing peace to that world. His work didn't end when he became one with the Force. Janus Loci. Noun. The spirit, or one of the spirits, presiding over or guarding a particular place. The Republic in its current form was nearly 1,000 years old, and its relationship with the Jedi went back even further than that. Some claimed it went back to before there was an Old Republic, to the first days of alliances between different species. Most scoffed at such tales. The Jedi might be legally bound to the Republic, but Force users were distrusted and feared by many. Still, the Jedi had the legal right to travel to any world in the Republic, no matter what the local views on Force users. Any world, but one. When the formerly war-torn world of Melidon rejoined the Republic, Senator Sarasi filed a copy of the Now United Planets Constitution. Few paid attention to the line banning Jedi knights and masters from the planet. The Jedi Order did, of course, but only one defied the order and landed there anyway. The Jedi had no idea what Master Jin had done until his body was returned to the Jedi Temple by a tramp freighter. The Jedi Master was, technically, alive, but his mind was trapped in an endless loop of pain and death, reliving the deaths of the countless children who had died on the war-torn planet. Eventually, if one waited long enough, the deaths repeated. The closest the Jedi healers had seen was the psychometrist being trapped in the memories of touching an object. The fact that Master Jin had never had such a gift, and remained trapped despite having left Melidon, was chalked up to an encounter with an unknown Force artifact. Unable to investigate further, the Jedi closed the case. One Jedi Padawan did visit Melidon, having noted that the Constitution did not ban the Service Corps or Padawans, only Knights and Masters. But Quinlan Vos did so without the Council's permission or knowledge and never filed a report. If, after that, from time to time he took aside an initiate about to age out who had no family to return to and no desire to join the Service Corps, well, he was a Jedi shadow. No one saw the meetings or the extra credits and tickets to an obscure world that found their way into the initiate's hands. The Sith also took notice of Melidon, a world that banned Jedi, that drove them to madness, was definitely worth noticing. No one thought it unusual that the senator from Naboo, a world with a tradition of child rulers, would reach out to a senator that on most worlds would still be considered too young to hold a job, much less political office. It was disappointing that more subtle Force manipulations slid off the young woman, but given that she was no Force user herself, it was just more evidence the Melidon held secrets the Sith could use. Unfortunately, the civil war on Melidon had left the survivors mistrustful of others, nearly to the point of paranoia. Palpatine had to wait until a local festival drew off-world visitors to have an excuse to visit himself. The Festival of Hope was a week-long spring celebration, and the only one open to off-worlders. He would rather have learned more of the Feast of Ashes, but that was in the autumn, and off-worlders were never invited to attend. At least he traveled in his own craft. Palpatine found the sight of tourists cooing over the local children, over the flowers planted everywhere, the displays of local arts and crafts nauseating. Trapped on a ship and forced to listen to such drivel, he might have been driven to murder. The world itself was much more interesting than the cutesy displays for the tourists. The planet was steeped in blood, centuries of war, betrayal and murder, and stained the Force. The laughter of the festival was the thinnest veneer of light over a deep darkness. But something more was going on. The Force twisted in ways he couldn't follow, wrapping the locals in its protection, feeding the flower's growth, while something waited, hanging, like a blade poised to fall. Anthropologists. They'll get more than half of it wrong. Palpatine had paused a little too long behind another group of off-worlders, who were avidly discussing a local song about white flowers and red mud. A boy in his early teens, red hair cut close to the head in the local style, had come up next to him without him noticing. The boy had a Coruscant accent, but dressed like a local and had the same odd Force shields as the others.
"Oh? How so?"
Palpatine did his best to look harmless and curious. Despite the local prejudice against adults, it seemed to be working because the boy lingered to talk. "They keep prattling on about the symbolism of red mud and white flowers. There's nothing symbolic about it. If a battle crossed a minefield, the mud would be red the next time it rained. And the flowers are a local weed that's high in vitamin C and other trace elements. We made it into tea." The boy tilted his head. "We did make a lot of jokes about drinking the blood of our enemies, but it wasn't obscure symbolism, it was just battlefield humor. Especially since the weeds did grow best on disturbed ground, like battlefields." The war had ended almost 3 years ago. "A child as young as you involved in battles. How awful." "How fascinating. Palpatine regretted not coming here sooner. Any Force-sensitive younglings would surely have been warped by the experience. What is your name, young man? And can you show me to the Plaza Hotel?" The young man smiled, an expression that didn't quite reach the eyes. "Most people call me Ben. And there's only three hotels. The River, the Plaza, and the Garden Hotels. They are, unsurprisingly, located next to the River, the Plaza, and the Public Gardens." Still, he turned and began a slow amble in the correct direction, letting Palpatine keep pace. Palpatine chuckles. "Are they owned by off-worlders? I would think children would have more imagination." As he passed through the crowds, they were ignored by the adults, which suited Palpatine fine. The local children would glance at Ben, then at Palpatine, then quickly look away. Perhaps they saw that with Ben as his guide, they had no chance at a tip, or whatever they called it locally. Ben smiled, a brief expression like the flash of a knife. "Off-worlders are not allowed to own land on Melidon. As for imagination is a luxury. What children are made of is belief. Children who are cosseted and safe can afford to believe in fantastical things. The belief of children in a war zone, well, that's a different thing. Practical. Feral. A faith full of claws and teeth." Palpatine's thoughts flashed briefly to the Zabrak child he was training.
They were children. True, they did something remarkable here, but it took more than just belief to win the war.
Somehow, they had taken a wrong turn, ending up in a part of the city that was still a bombed-out ruin. The hairs on the back of Palpatine's neck started to prickle, as he realized he couldn't recall making any turns at all. Ben gave him another of those cutting smiles.
Oh, it took actions and blood, tears and deaths, but it was started by faith. They believed in a future, safe from the manipulations of the elders. They believed in me. And I know an elder when I see one.
Palpatine could swear he heard the echoes of distant blaster fire. So much for the Festival of Peace. It would make it easier to hide Ben's body. Before the boy could move or react, Palpatine let loose a barrage of Force lightning. The boy smiled as the lightning passed through him, doing nothing. Then the red-haired boy just vanished. Palpatine took a half step into a collapsed hole he didn't recall seeing or walking around before. The short fall wasn't a problem. The half a dozen pieces of sharp, rusted rebar were. Palpatine's body was returned to Naboo. A tragic accident, it was said. One that happened two or three times a year when tourists foolishly decided the warnings of the dangers of the war-scarred world did not apply to them. The official reports said nothing of the white flowers that had sprang up from the blood-stained earth beneath the body. Flowers the young lovingly transplanted to the town gardens, planting them around a statue dedicated to the memory of a young former Padawan who had sacrificed himself to protect the young and their dreams of peace. A month or so later, a young, traumatized Zabrak boy slipped out of the freighter he'd stowed away on, gambling on his belief in the Force and his dreams of freedom. A half a dozen young were waiting there, following the message in their own dreams, waiting to welcome him home. The end.